Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of Show Talk with Angela Butler. The guest today is to be Mr. Lou Rawls Jr. He is the son of the famous Lou Rawls, who has songs number one, You Will Never Find a Love Like Mine and Lady Love and so many more hits. So we're going to wait for his son to join in. I'm waiting for him now. In the meantime, I'm going to play a song sung by Mr. Abbott, Gregory Abbott, Ain't No Sunshine.
Sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. I know.
All right, that was Mr. Gregory Abbott. Ain't no sunshine. Beautiful voice there. But we have the son of the legend, Mr. Lou Rawls, who we know is also famous for the Negro College Fund. He did many fundraisers for the Negro College Fund. He is deceased now. His son, Lou Rawls Jr., is an independent artist, or indie artist. And he has great vocals, too. He inherited that from his dad. And we're going to talk about a film that he made based on his dad. And he was also on Unsung 3 or 4 years ago. So while we wait, I'm going to play a little bit of Melissa Morgan. Hello, Mr. Lou Rawls Jr. Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. How are you doing?
Hello. Good, dear. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Sorry about that. Yes, I can. How are you?
Okay, I'm fine. So welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. You are the son of Mr. Lou Rawls, who's well known for songs such as You Will Never Find Another Love Like Mine and Lady Love. I mean, your dad is a legend.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. He is also famous for the Negro College Fund, raising
money for it
and doing telethons.
He raised over $400 million and put 200,000 kids through college. One of the accomplishments that we've been very happy. We're very happy and hopefully can be able to continue on the legacy that you started, and just very excited about the future. And I want to thank you for having me on the show.
So you are indie artist. Also for people who are not familiar with the word indie, independent means independent artist.
Right.
Yeah, I'm producing like your dad.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, I was in a band with Marvin Gaye's son for a little while. Unfortunately, it didn't come pan out. And right now I'm producing a film on my godfather, Sam Cooke, as well as Rick James. I'm doing the Rick James story, as well as I'm producing a film on my father as well. So, yes, they're we're all independently financed, but we are doing with major distribution. I'm not sure if it's either Lionsgate or Universal. We haven't consummated that deal yet, but that's in the works right now.
All right. Well, not trying to put people's business out there, but you need to talk to Eddie LeBert Jr.
I know Eddie. I know Eddie very well, actually. You know, we were, you know, I'm very familiar with the LeBert family, and, you know, Eddie's doing some things, and just, you know, everybody's trying to do their things. David Ruffin Jr., actually, I'm doing a show with him, and Jackie Wilson's son as well. We're going on tour this summer, and, you know, called Shadows of a Legend. And, you know, we're just, you know, sharing the, you know, the talents of, and just us trying to make our own mark in our own way and, you know, just trying to separate ourselves from, you know, create our own way, if you will. Continue on the legacy that they started and hope to make them proud.
Okay, so you also make films.
Yes.
Okay. And the tour you were on with Mr. Eddie LeBert Jr., what was it called?
It's called Shadows of a Legend.
Shadows of a Legend.
It's a reality-based show. Yeah, it's a reality-based show on, you know, what we're doing and, like I said, continuing on the legacy and careers of our fathers and kind of making our own mark in the charitable organizations we work with and the different endeavors that we're trying to do within the community. And, you know, like I said, just trying to make our own mark and create our own legacy, if you will.
Yes. All right. That's wonderful. That was what I was speaking about. Okay. So, now, what is it like growing up with a man that is as famous as your father, Mr. Lurel?
Well, I mean, people ask me, you know, that question from time to time. To be honest with you, you know, I will say this. I didn't know that he was just gone all the time when I was growing up. I didn't know who Lou Rawls was really until I got older and we actually went on the road with him. And that's when I really began to understand the magnitude of the, you know, the career that he had had, you know, because like I said, he was just somebody who was gone all the time. I thought growing up, everybody's parents were on the road. You know what I mean? It did that. I didn't know that, you know, it was something, you know, different and unique, if you will. Then I got older and, you know, I mean, listen, all I can say to that is I've been me all my life, and I'm certainly no better than anybody else. I've just experienced more things. When your parent's a public figure, obviously things are magnitude, you know, it changes things, if you will, kind of a perception of yourself and of people. People think that, you know, it would be going a certain way, and, you know, I speak from personal experience. I've had to work for mine, which I don't mind doing. But, it, you know, sometimes it's great and sometimes it can be very difficult, you know, because there's a certain expectation, if you will, that's placed upon you. I'm sorry?
I say yes.
I just said yes.
There's a certain expectation.
Yeah, there's a public perception and an expectation, if you will. And if you don't necessarily meet those things that are placed upon you, you know, you may be seen as a – that's why I hate the word potential, because if you don't live up to it, you're seen as a failure. You know what I mean? And I very much am not a failure by any stretch. But, I mean, certainly there are demands that are placed upon you that just kind of go with, you know, being the son of. I didn't ask to be that, but Annie gave me his name. So there's obviously a certain connotation, if you will, or a connection that you, you know, the best thing I can do is just be the best that I can be, you know, and try and create and set an example that I, you know, always try to maintain, and the standard that I set for myself is greater than any pressure that anyone could put on me, because that's just the way that I am, you know. So it's, you know, look, when it's good, it's great. When it's bad, it's the worst. That's, you know, one of the best ways I can use kind of describe what that's like. And, you know, my life is no different. We all go through trials and tribulations and tragedies and heartaches and heartbreaks. But, you know, for the most part, you know, it's not where you start, it's how you finish. And
yes,
I believe I've got, you know, a little more time to go. So,
yes, you do.
You know, so I'm, you know, I'm very happy. I'm working with some very talented people right now, and just very excited about the future and working with people like yourself.
Oh, wow.
I appreciate the time you're giving me to share my vision and my view with the world. And, you know, as long as I, you know, keep moving forward, I'm very satisfied with that. You know, I won't say satisfied, but I'm content. Because I'm never satisfied.
Okay. All right. So I'm more than glad to have you on Show Talk with Angela Butler. So you're making your own legacy.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have family? I mean, children?
No, I don't have any children yet. And I'm not married. I've been married in the past, so I'm divorced. And but no, God hasn't blessed me with that. I mean, I love kids, and I'm sure that will come when the time is right. But right now, I'm focusing on myself to be the best I can be, so I can provide for my friends and family in the way that I would like to, you know, the manner that I'm accustomed to doing and having.
That's wonderful. Understand what you're talking about, trials and tribulations. It cannot be easy, though. Making your own identity and your own life when you're the son of somebody so famous as your father, Mr. Lou Rawls. Are you close to your mother?
Yes, I'm very close to my mother. My mom's in Texas. She's in Houston, and she's still alive, you know, thank God. And, we have a great relationship, you know.
Okay.
So.
Right, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I do have two other stepmothers as well, and I don't know if it's been publicly noted that with the last wife there have been some issues within the family between us, but it's hopefully resolving itself, and that'll kind of just play itself out as such. But I'm not really relying or depending or waiting on that situation necessarily to pan out for me to carve my own way and make my own future. So it's just anything that comes from that would be a positive. But, as we go along in life, the clock stays ticking, and I can't sit and wait on anything. I've always chose going out and pursued it and, make things happen on my own and for myself, be sitting here still waiting, So it's kind of my motto.
Right. You have do things for your own self. That's great. Yeah. Sometimes I believe that children, men and women like you who are children of famous people, it may have it a little harder than other people because people think you should be just like the father.
Some of us that have famous parents do get kind of caught in trying to step into their shoes. And the first thing, if you really have an awareness of yourself and your situation, the biggest mistake you can make, I can never fill his shoes. I can only kind of create my own.
You're doing that wonderfully.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So, the best thing
I can do is create my own, make my own merit, and my own, go my own way. And with that, that will speak for itself. Because like I said, I can't duplicate him. He was one of a kind, legendary performer, and did great things for the community, and I'm just hoping to continue on that legacy and make him proud and keep the community interaction and always making myself available for causes and things that make sense to me and that have a purpose behind it. For that, I greatly appreciate the opportunity and have been blessed to be able to utilize the name and to continue to create awareness for causes and projects and things that interest me that I find appealing, that I find can help the community at large for itself. And so as long as I can, as long as I continue to do that and be unselfish in my regard and my viewpoint with it, then things that will keep blessing me with opportunities. But, I don't know what it's like to be anything else other than myself. It's hard to really compare. I can't really compare myself other than to, what I know, And so that's how I try to stay humble and, my feet on the ground, So,
yes.
And that's really all you can ask for.
Yes. Yes, sir. So you're a producer and an executive, and your producer, Love is a Hurting Thing, Cold Other Brethren, and I don't know if it's been released or not for 2016,
2015, the 57 Bushfield Champ?
Yeah, well, no. The Love is a Hurting Thing is the script that I wrote on my father. It's basically a love story between my mother and my father and the time that they spent together and the, you know, coming up to the the climate of the country at that time was, you know, interracial marriages were not necessarily they weren't looked upon, if they will, as they are now. You know, especially my mom was Miss Texas in 59, so obviously he came out west where they could be together, relatively safe. And so now what it has become now is the theory of Code of the Brethren is a kind of a Harry Potter meets Lord of the Rings. It's five films based off of four books. And we're currently through production with that right now. And, you know, like I said, I've got the Sam Cooke project. I've got the Rick James project. And those are all in pre-production right now. And so, yeah, I've got a few things in the works and doing a couple of TV series. Like I said, I'm going on the road with David Ruffin Jr. and Jackie Wilson's son, Bobby Brooks Wilson, later on this summer. And so, yeah, I've got a couple things. I'm trying to stay busy. And then I've got the charity organizations that I work with. I've got my grandfather's Lewis Rawls Foundation that I'm head of that, as well as the License 501c3 out of Chicago that my grandfather started in 1942. And so, yeah, you know, I try to stay active and, you know, with the community and, you know, like I said, once again, establishing my own name, you know, my own mark, if you will, and continue on the legacy that he has created and hope to make him proud. And you know, when he's looking down upon me, you know, bring a smile to his face. So.
Yes, because you've already did that. I don't know if you realize it or not. You have made your own living legend. Just by being yourself.
Well, thank you.
Just by using your own talent as a producer. Yes, sir. So, were you and your father close? Always?
Yeah, I mean, we you know, as any father and son do, you know, we had our moments. You know, but yeah, overall, I'd say our relationship was close, tumultuous at times, but, you know, no different than any other father and son who, you know, do what they you know, we were very competitive within each other. We had a very competitive nature that he instilled in me that applied to everything in my life in general, including him as well. So I don't differentiate. I'm an equal opportunity competitor. You know, so, but yeah, as a whole, yeah, our relationship was actually very close. And, you know, unfortunately, when he got ill at the very end, you know, we got very close and made our amends and, you know, and kind of came full circle. So, yeah, I mean, I have closure with that, if you will. So, yeah,
yes,
overall, as
wonderful.
A whole, the relationship was good, yes.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I'm glad to hear that. Now, I've been doing some research, and I've been trying to figure out if you and Lou Rawls, I believe it's pronounced Nareen Jr. are related.
Who?
It's a gentleman by the name of Lou Rawls Nareen Jr.
I don't
He's a
know
point guard
who
at
that
one
is.
Time.
Oh, no. But the guy who played for Michigan State. No, we're not related.
Yeah.
No, we're not related. He may be a cousin or, you know, actually I remember when they made the Final Four, you know, the Rawls name was being thrown around, and I remember I was watching the game and they said something. We may be related because I don't know if that many Rawls is actually, you know. So for the most part, the Rawls that I have come across somewhere down the family tree, we have been related. But I have met him actually, but I have obviously heard of him. He's getting a lot of pub when he was at Michigan State. So, but yes, no, we may be related, but I can't say that I know that for a fact, or I can't deny that it's a fact. So.
Oh, okay. All right,
no,
I was just wondering.
No, that's a good question. I wish I had the exact answer for you because I don't know the answer to that. So.
Okay.
But, yeah, but, you know, once again, he kept the Rawls name proud, you know, doing his thing, you know, and that's what it's all about. So contributing to the cause in a positive way, I'm all about. So.
Okay. All right, so what – besides what you let me know about. Is there anything else that's coming about that you'd like to tell the people listening?
I'm putting together, my dad had the Lou Rawls Parade of Stars for the United Negro College Fund. I'm doing the Lou Rawls Junior College Concert Series, which is basically going to be taking the show on the road and, finding to the different 49 black colleges and universities across the country. And, as you know, some of the colleges don't have the types of venue to hold 15, 20, 25,000 people. So we will be going to communities that have like arenas and sporting, stadiums of such that can hold that type, and then applying the money proceeds, portions of proceeds raised from the event will be spread out amongst, charities and the universities and colleges in the community, whatever town that is. So basically that's my way of kind of continuing on the association with the educational, situation that my dad was so staunchly for and supported. So that's my way of kind of continuing on that aspect of his legacy that he started, if you will.
Okay.
So.
All right. So you're, in a way, you're continuing, preserving the Rawls legacy, because you're spearheading an organization where students of color, African American, Hispanic American, Latino, Asian, and Native American, you're helping them to get financial aid for higher education.
Right. Well, absolutely. I mean, and also charity, medical cancer research, AIDS research, things that are very, obviously my dad passed away from cancer, so that obviously has big proponent of that, supporter of that. I mean, like I said, education, like my dad said, is the key to the future. And, as long as everybody's given the equal shot, it's all about creating an equal opportunity around the scale balance for everyone, involved, that they all get a fair shot at what they can do to the world and contribute to the world. And if I can do anything to help further that on, the goals and the wishes and the dreams that they have for the community as a whole, I'm all about that, and I support many causes and lend my name and my abilities to things that I believe in that, like I said, can help further the community and help people out. I'm a team player and understand that the brand can be utilized properly and when done the right way, can bring attention and awareness to certain causes that normally wouldn't get that. And so to me, that's one of the ways that I can do, I can continue to help and lend support to things and use the brand and, because obviously the name is, recognized internationally. So,
yeah.
Excuse me, anything that I can do to, further great causes like that, like cancer research and educational programs throughout the country and the world, I'm all about. So.
Yes. Okay, so you continue the legacy of your father, Mr. Lou Rawls, and you also have created a living legend for your own name in your own right.
Well, thank you. Well, I wouldn't go far as a living
legend,
but I mean.
Okay.
I'm working towards that legendary status, if you will. But I mean, everyone's legend in their own mind, if you will. They should feel that way, So it's all about, feeling good about yourself and the things that you're trying to do and being the best you can be and, contributing to the world as a whole. And, and it's all about the results,
Yes, I agree with that. I was going to, everybody knows someone who has either died of cancer or has cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And some have survived cancer. My stepdad wasn't so lucky. He died in 2014. He was 76. But, just seems like everybody's getting cancer, to be honest with you. And I can say this, 2 or 3 years back, we had a get-together in my family, and I bought over chicken leg quarters. And everybody's eyes had popped out their head when they saw the size of those leg quarters.
They said those leg quarters are the size of what turkey meat used to be. And yeah,
right.
So it has to be something they're putting in that food. Now, I have to wonder about the size of quarters myself, because back in my day, in the 80s, when I was growing up, and in the 70s and 80s, there was a size for turkey necks and things, and a size for chicken necks. And now they're like huge.
Yeah. Well, you gotta understand with the population as a whole, and technology, as it will, with the the steroids, and they're still working on the effects that it has on the body, but obviously, it's basically numbers now. There's a lot of people in the world, and so the chicken legs have to look like turkey legs. A lot of people eat off them. So I'm not saying that it's right, but I'm that's just where it's at. I don't work for the FDA, so I kind of take it at value that they say it's safe to eat. I like chicken, personally, but I mean, obviously, if it looks deformed, I'm not going to eat it. But as a whole, I'm relatively healthy. I can't tell you 30 years from now what it's going to be, but if I live 30 more years, I will be very satisfied with the life that I've lived and the things that I've done, and But, with technology the way it is and the climate of the country, and I must say that unfortunately right now with this presidential election, things are kind of the direction of the country is between the terrorists and the unfortunate events that are happening around the world. You should feel very blessed when you wake up every day to have the opportunity to go on out and live your life and do the things that you can do. And because, it's kind of crazy right now. And I'm a Clinton supporter myself. Personally, I think Trump is the greatest threat to this country right now, to be perfectly honest with you. And, that's just my take, my little political take on that situation, which I really don't think my dad and I would, his political aspirations. I mean, he sang it for inaugurations. It didn't matter whether Republican or Democrat. It was all about what was right for the country and the people at large. I'm kind of the same way. And I think that Donald Trump is a very real threat to this country and the climate of the country, because the man has no regard, and for a man who's, the art of the deal, he's filed bankruptcy 3 times. So it doesn't sound like he really knows what he's doing to me. He has no foreign policy. He's inciting riots against the races at his rallies. It's insanity. No one in the history of politics as we are now, as we know as a nation, have ever seen anything remotely close to the kind of things that we're seeing every day on TV now.
No. And to me, television is desensitizing on the people, because people get used to seeing killings by a police officer, or people killing each other. So it's horrible.
The climate of the country
is.
The climate of the country is in a very, very different place. And, you've got to be very careful and choose the decisions that you make right now. You have to be objective, try and take your emotions out of it, because when you make decisions based on emotion, they tend to be incorrect. When you can make objective decisions, you have a clear mind and you know exactly what your goals and the end result will be. But if it's based on emotion, as we all know, there is no line between love and hate. That's what I have found. And that you love somebody, there's no line that you cross and say, I hate that person. you just hate that person, And so then the next thing you're back in love with them. So, I speak from my, that's Lou's experience. I don't speak from the masses. I speak what I have experienced personally. That's the only opinion that I can really give. Because, each person's life is different. But I'd like to believe that.
Yes, that is true. That is very
well
true. Everybody has a different life. So I would like to ask, what do you think of President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama?
I think all things considered, the man has done a phenomenal job for being president. I mean, the country's at an all-time high. I mean, obviously, listen, we could always do more, okay, for what the man's done and the situation that he's dealt with and where the country was and where the country's at and the direction that it's headed. All things considered, I think the guy's done an amazing job. No no real scandals or problems or issues or really, I mean, the man is, like I said, the first black president, I think he's done a phenomenal job, and the numbers speak for themselves. People can say whatever they want, but if you look at the hard facts, the fact that the country is in a better place than it was, the more man's created more jobs, you know, I mean, I think people would like to see more of the black part of the president come out with some of these foreign issues that they have with ISIS and things of that nature. But really, outside of that, I think the man's done an amazing job, and Michelle and the kids have represented the country in a manner that has been very made us all very proud as Americans. And there's one thing I'm sure when they get behind the closed doors, I'm sure there were all types of things that obviously to the world you can only represent yourself in a certain manner. He's the president of the United States, but we also sent in drones up and killed more terrorists than anybody. And like I said, we just had the terrorist attack over in Brussels.
Obviously, there's
a concentrated effort to inflict harm and damage, and this ISIS situation is out of control. We've never seen any kind of the nature of the terrorism and the barbarism that they've seen shown publicly through social media and other ways. We've never seen that before, and that's what's so fascinating
no.
and so scary to the world, because we've never seen the type of horror and terror and pain and suffering that they've inflicted on the world, and they want to post it on social media. It's never been done before, and that's actually, we're, like I said, it's the climate of the country, and with technology in today's day and time, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, I mean,
yes,
I just wish I had stock in some of all of them. We'd all be very, very happy if we had stock. I can't see. But but I'm here. Hello?
I'm here still. I was just trying to give you a break here. I didn't want to interrupt because I'm trying
I'm sorry,
questions.
I was distracted for a second. That's all right. Thank you.
Okay.
That's okay.
All right. All right. Well, so far I'm learning a lot. I feel like President Obama, even though I'm not a politician, has been treated us very unfairly. And very much disrespected. I even will go as first. I feel like he's been discriminated against also.
Listen, if the man wasn't black, they'd be calling him the greatest president in the history of the world. Okay, but because the man is black, obviously, well, mixed. He's African-American and half his mother was his dad was, yeah, his dad was black. His mom was white, right? Or was it the other way around? I'm not really sure. Hawaiian?
Yes, sir.
Anyway. The bottom line is never is the Congress, the Senate, they voted, they conspired. We're not going to pass anything that the man has, never in the history of the United States as a president ever dealt with the kind of opposition within the parties that this man has dealt with. And to still have the relative, been as successful as he has, I think is amazing, and as far as for a black president, I'm so happy that it was him and not Jesse Jackson the first one. No Jesse, but I'm just saying, I think, believe the impression that the man has made, that he has opened the doors for he's set a high standard. The bar has been set very high, and he's represented himself in the way that, as an African-American, you would hope he would have been able to do it as he has. And so for that, he gets, an A-plus in my book. I think the man's done a phenomenal job, all things
considered. Yes, me too. I think he has, too. I really do. I think he's been great, but nobody's perfect. I mean, you can't please everybody, but he's done so much.
Well, he's done
a lot
of
that people don't even know about.
Well, of course, and that's the thing. Like I said, the man is, steadily doing, moving forward, and he's, he's opening himself up to the world, like through the basketball tournament, and, showing that the man is, human, and as well as, listen. You forget that the most powerful man in the world is a human being. And like you said, nobody's perfect. We all have, I personally don't have skeletons. I have graveyards in the closet, but, some are more fortunate than others. And I, like I said, listen, life cuts no breaks to anyone. It's an equal opportunity person that, I don't say person, but it's an equal opportunity provider. And, it's upon you to make the best you can be for yourself and put the best foot forward. because this is not, you know, this is 2016. This is not 1816 and 1916.
That's what I'm saying.
Time, so,
things like this, you wouldn't think, I believe, 20 or 25 years ago, these things would be happening. Some of it's happened all over again. Some of it has never happened.
I watched some of these shows. Yeah, back in the 60s and 50s, I had problems back then. You know, it was a different kind of world not too long ago. And in some ways, like you said, it is kind of reverting back to that. But that, once again, you know, the masses as a whole look to leaders and people in position of power to kind of guide and direct them and base their direction on life and, you know, influenced. And, you know, people can be manipulated very easily and, you know, led to believe things that aren't true, you know, and like I said, with social media and things, you can start things, just create a wave of momentum on their own, and the next thing you know,
yes,
it becomes real, even though from an idea that has no merit and no grounds whatsoever, but that's, you know.
Okay.
Listen, I didn't invent the world, I just live in it, so that's just my observation.
I know, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know. But like I said, to me, it's dangerous times, and racism is at a high.
Racism is,
like,
is very much alive and well.
Klan, the neo-Nazis are trying very well, has let did everything they could to let everyone know that they're just still well and alive, and
well,
they want to
well,
know,
yeah,
want people to. But yet, the bad thing is, one of the Ku Klux Klan men, President Obama, wasn't all bad for them, because they now have more Ku Klux Klan members than at any time in the history of the Ku Klux Klan and the neo-Nazis.
Well,
so,
that's one of the disadvantages to those types of groups, because they come together of a united cause, and unfortunately it's because we have a black president. But I also am saying that to say this, there was an actress, a Latin American actress, who said, "Mr. Trump, I want to thank you for doing something that no one has ever been able to do. You have brought our community together to ensure that you do not get in office." So that's the other way that works as well. So, you know, listen, as long as the scales keep relatively balanced, you know, unfortunately, with the shootings, you know, with the corruption, with the police officers around the country right now, you know, once again, as a whole, as you know, you look at things at face value, sometimes they appear to be negligent, you know, across the board, and things were done improperly, so on and so forth. And there, listen, I'm not perfect, and I'm not saying anybody ever deserved to be treated that way. That's not true what I'm saying. And then the context is what I'm saying it in. But having said that, there's a protocol and a procedure and a right way and a wrong way to do things. And, you know, if you pretty much follow those rules, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong.
Yes, that's
like,
right.
I live
that's
in Los
true.
Angeles, so it's you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you have to pick and choose your battles, and you have to be smart, and you know, you got to stay on, you know, listen, you can always tighten your game up a little,
and
for the most part, that's what everybody kind of has to do. You have to remember, there are people that are in position of power and influence who do not like you, and you know, they become that to get into that position to be able to inflict people and affect people's lives in that manner, particularly for that reason. And so keeping that in mind, you know, you have to just be smart and go into situations trying to do your best to create and lead the inevitable outcome which works in your favor for a positive outcome and not become a statistic. You know, I'm not trying to become a statistic. When I get pulled over, it's yes, sir, no, sir, and, you know, right or wrong, whatever that may be, you know, but it's all about me and if I get the car and drive off.
Yes, that's right.
You know,
showing respect,
absolutely.
To keep them being locked up or murdered. It's yes, sir.
Yeah, you won't be hearing about how I got shot. they won't be seeing me and on footage running away from the cop car getting shot in the back. That's not going to be happening with me. So,
yes,
but like I said, unfortunately,
there
are some situations.
You alive.
Yeah, but there are situations where they have taken advantage of that, and obviously they are now. The difference between now and before is they weren't being prosecuted. Now they're being prosecuted, at least.
Some mysterious, another
murder, you know, something tragic that happened because of they said so, whatever. They are now being prosecuted, and we'll keep cameras on every corner, you know.
Yes, sir.
They got to tighten the game up, too, because, you know, the law is an equal opportunity.
And that doesn't happen often where the police are actually being prosecuted or at least having it explain why they killed, because back in the 60s and 70s, they didn't really have to explain anything.
They didn't explain nothing. They were just driving them off roads and hanging them. And, you know, I mean, I've seen some things. Like I said, it would have been very hard for me to live back in that era.
Yeah.
Because I take issue with it. And, you know, fortunately I'm now, you know, they couldn't just take me out back and shoot me in the head. Back then, they could do that. You know, like I said, my mother, like I said, Miss Texas, and, you know, my dad and her came to California so they could be together, because that was the only place they could be together. They couldn't have been together anywhere else in the country at that time.
So they would be considered today, it wouldn't really be a big thing like it was back then for a black man with a woman, either of Caucasian or Latino, or even Chinese or Japanese. It's not a big thing now. It's not a big deal back then. At some point, they made marriage legal for people of different races to marry each other. You know, so I understand what you're talking about. It's not like that now. Because I have cousins.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I have cousins who are married to men of different races or women of different races. But back then, it wasn't acceptable at all. It wasn't even legal.
Yeah, no, like I said, my parents, my mother, they were in Texas, and that was not going to be going over well. So, and you know, for them to be together, and, you know, she used to have to paint her face black because, you know, they wouldn't let him stay in certain hotels if they knew she was white. Right. So she would shoe polish on her face so they could check in certain places in the country and go to certain parts of the country safely and get out, you know, and make it out without, you know, encountering, you know, vicious racism that was alive then. It's still to some parts of the country is alive to this day. So, but yes. I stay out of those parts of the country, so I don't have to really concern myself with that. Like I said, I live in Los Angeles, so, you know, we don't really have that. You know, racism is alive and well. It's just out here they hide it better.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, it's more in the criminal. Where I live, it's a small town. Where I live at, it's a small town. But in places like where you probably live at, out there in the state of California, I don't know which part, but it's.
I'm in Los Angeles.
People really don't. Los Angeles? Okay.
Yeah.
People don't really feel like they're being discriminated against or see discrimination until they're in the courtroom or the criminal justice system. Like, then you realize how prejudiced things are.
Yeah, no, like I said, there, you know, depending on what parts of the country you are, and even here in California, there are certain cities, if you will, that people, you know, of color and of different, you know, nationalities know not to go into that part of town after dark, per se, for whatever reason that may be, because of the law enforcement that are out there, because there are some factions out here in different parts of the community that it's just, you know not to go to, because, you know, they will pull you over, you know, because you're black driving through that part of town at that time. So we just know not to do that. Burbank. Anyway,
it's the same here.
You know.
There's only three traffic lights where I live at.
There's only three traffic lights where you live? Oh, you say, where are you at? Where are
so
you at?
Not until the exact location, but I'm near Dothan, Alabama. If you go to YouTube,
Alabama,
you'll find out about the cop. I'm near it. I'm about 30 minutes from there. If you go to YouTube, you'll find about the Dothan, Alabama police and how they did people since the mid-90s. How they planted drugs and weapons on a lot of African American men and women.
You know, I read what they did in Ferguson, where they did where the where the tickets, the police officers as a whole was what, 97% white, but the community they serviced was 95% black. You know, and
yes,
the tickets that they wrote, they basically funded the police department on the traffic tickets, knowing that the people couldn't pay them, and then they incurred the fines, and it started out as a $75 ticket, and it ended up being a $1,400 ticket, and then they got arrested. You know, and it can be a very vicious cycle, you know, and unfortunately there are people and programs and things that are in place to keep, you know, to keep the races, if you will, segregated and kind of down, if you will, and once again, it goes back to education. As long as you can read, write, and count, you know, that pretty much equals out to kind of eliminate that whole racism thing. Because if you put four children in a sandbox, they don't know the difference between skin color.
No, they're taught
racism.
Nobody's born prejudiced.
Yeah, it's something. It's not bred. It's not something you're born with. It's called environment and conditioning.
Yes,
so.
It's what you're taught as a child.
Exactly.
You're right. No one is born racist or prejudiced.
Right.
Okay. So I have a question for you. Did you know, where Miss Whitney Houston lives, did you know her or her ex-husband, Bobby Brown Jr.?
I'm very good friends with Mr. Brown. I've known Bobby for close to 25 years. I had met Whitney a couple times. Her and my dad were very close. She was in one of the first telethons that my dad started. You know, she was a very strong supporter of him and his causes. And like I said, I've known Bobby since he was a New Edition. You know, we go back many, many years. And, you know, me personally, I think he's a great guy. And, I know he endured a lot and they went through a lot together. But, you know, listen, nobody's perfect. And contrary to what the world wants to try and make you out to be, you're going to be what you are. So the only difference is, you know, she could sing and she was very talented, but, you know, sometimes the pressures that go with that can be very demanding. And you know, there's no book on how to be a star. If it was, you know, it would have been written.
Sure.
And for each person, it's a different, unique situation. It's unique unto its own. And so with that, like I said, if you could write a book on it, if I could package it, I would. But I can't. And so it's just unique to itself. And each person is doing it because the industry as a whole, if they build you up, they blow you up. And, you know, just like I said, it's all about doing the best that you can do and giving your best effort.
Yes.
Trying to remain relatively humble and normal, if you will.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And Bob, the daughter, Bobby Christina Brown. Now,
another
if you don't want to answer this, I'm not trying to insult you, but, I exploit things. But their daughter, Bobby Christina, you know, I've never met any of these people. They're way out my range, always have been. I just have to wonder, I mean, you grew up with a famous father, and nobody's perfect, like you said. You've made your own mistakes. All of us have. All of us have skeletons in our closets, too. But what I'm wondering about, even though you said you don't have any children, with Bobby Christina Brown and Miss Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown, I mean, how did you avoid, how can I put it? I'm not trying to insult her.
Mr. Bobby
Brown. How did you avoid not being where Miss Whitney Houston is? And even though you don't have children, Miss Bobby Christina Brown, what helped you not to end up like that?
Because
you have a famous father.
I've had my issues with addiction, if you will. There was a time in my life where I was, you know, still trying to figure out what way I was going and creating my own personality and getting comfortable within myself. But, you know, there comes a time when drugs can no longer be used as an excuse. You know, that's my thought on it. And unfortunately, with Bobby Christina, she was in a situation. You know, the gene is carried down from you, so if you have an addictive personality trait within your parent, it's going to be passed down to you as a child. And unfortunately, the situation with the cousin, the husband, whatever that situation was, and the people around her, She was easily manipulated and influenced. Unfortunately, her mother had passed, so she was in a very delicate situation. And, you know, there are some bad people in the world who will take advantage of that opportunity. And obviously that's what happened to her, because she, what would the odds be of her drowning in a bathtub like her mother? I mean, that's in itself, you know, the man coming in there. I mean, that's why he's being sued civilly right now. They can't prosecute him criminally, because they don't have the burden upon the state to prove that. But they feel that they can sue him and take his money enough. They feel that they can hit him with a civil suit. So obviously there's grounds, you know. Listen, I believe O.J. Simpson was always guilty. You know, I don't care how anybody feels about it. But that's what I feel. So, but he got off. He beat a double murder case. But if you know anything about O.J. Simpson, you know, the show is, which now is the number one show in the country, the People versus O.J. Simpson, you know, it's a lot of hype, but there are some actual factual things in there. And listen, if you look at things and you take them at face value, if it wasn't O.J. Simpson, he'd be doing life right now.
Okay.
Let's keep it 100. So, you know, there's, like I said, listen, I live in the world. I didn't create it. I just live in it, and I see things for what they are, and I stand firm by things
I
believe.
I just live in this world.
So, you know, if I could, in the perfect world, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We'd have no need to.
No.
That's not the reality
no.
of it. So, you got to just kind of take
That's
it as,
right.
it, as it comes. So.
Right. Miss Whitney Houston left something that she'll always do. That won't known for. Miss Houston had a beautiful voice. I mean, I love to hear her singing. Bobby Brown, Mr. Bobby Brown Jr., Every Little Step, he taped My Prerogative, New Edition. I mean, I grew up listening to them. New Edition, Bobby Brown. I mean, wow.
Bobby was the, listen, Bobby Brown was the, he was the head of New Jack. He was the king of New Jack. You know what I mean? And,
yes.
Like I said, Every Little Step, My Prerogative, you know, New Edition, the man was he's still very talented to this day. Listen, you don't get to become they were the two biggest stars at the time in the world who came together.
Yes, they were.
You know,
and
in spite of what everybody thought or what they said, they carved their way and they did the thing. And, hey, listen, we should all be so lucky as to find someone that you care about that much to be able to share and go through the things you went through with that person. And unfortunately for her, you know, she had a very untimely demise. But listen, like I said, she will always be remembered for the talent, very talented person that she was, and the mark that she left on the world. And Bobby, who, you know, is still alive to this day, and he's, you know, getting on with his way and continuing on with his life. And unfortunately, with the thing that happened with Bobby Christina, it's an American tragedy in that perspective. But, you know, as far as the incredibly talented person that they both are, you know, that's what, you know, and nobody can really understand what that's like to be with somebody like that unless you've been in that situation. How would you handle that? Nobody, you know, it's hard to speak unless you've experienced something like that, and very few people in this world and lifetime have, because I can't really think of Bobby and Whitney, can you?
No, but they, like you said, at one time were the greatest singers, really famous. And Bobby Brown singing, Miss Whitney Houston, Run to You, I Look to You, I'm Every Woman, The Greatest Love of All. I'm still listening to their songs.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I am.
Absolutely. Listen, they created the mark, and made a mark, and they will be forever remembered, you know, 100 years from now. It'll still be, you know, she'll still be Whitney Houston, and he'll still be Bobby Brown, and, you know, it's still one of those, you know, it's very, you know, it's kind of, you know, like I said,
yeah. Hello? All right. We can no longer hear. Now I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm here. I've something happened with the phone. I don't know what the.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, these smartphones are Sometimes they're too smart for themselves.
They're not always so smart. Yeah, they're too smart
yeah,
for themselves.
Exactly. They're not always so smart. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed interviewing you and talking to you. I hope you've enjoyed the interview. I
yes,
will
see
you your
so
link
much for
to
having
it.
Me. Thank you so
You're
much.
You're more than
I appreciate
welcome.
It.
And I, you know, I look forward to seeing more songs, more films, and things that you are producing. And if you ever need an actress, I use that.
Okay,
so,
I will keep that in mind, definitely.
Yeah, I'm trying to model
when
you.
I'm out in that
at
area,
my age.
When I'm out in Alabama and down around your town, I'll certainly give
I'm
you a call.
I'm not in Alabama.
And,
I'm about 30
no,
minutes
saying,
from
you know,
Alabama.
Down, that, down and around in that area, you know, coming through with the college concert series, definitely get in touch. And we'll, you know, continue this on. But I want to thank
okay.
you for interviewing
I'm
me.
I'm in
and
Northwest Florida.
And, great.
The Panhandles.
So once again, I thank you for having me on the show and your listeners all listening, and hope you guys enjoyed the interview, and thank you so much.
And thank you, Mr. Lou Rawls Jr., and don't forget the acting part, okay? Alan Marlin.
Will do, sweetheart.
Okay,
all right,
thank you
so
sir.
Much, sir. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thank you. All right, everyone, you've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler, and the interview today was with Mr. Lou Rawls Jr. He is the son of Mr. Lou Rawls. So it's a very interesting interview. You know, he was talking about, you know, things. He was answering my question. He was talking a little bit about interracial marriages because he's biracial. So, you know, he's talking about the difference then and now. So things have changed. A whole lot from back then when I was growing up, and you know, things are better. It doesn't seem like they're better in a lot of in different ways, but then in a lot of ways, it seems like people are still fighting for the just to keep the right that we already have, because it wasn't always legal to marry a married interracial couple. It wasn't legal. So I'm just saying segregation, I mean, things have changed, but some things have worsened. I believe it's because more people are aware of things. Social media, internet, cyber world, mobiles. The world has got smaller, in my opinion, because of smartphones, social media sites, internet, computers, laptops. I mean, people can get the word out quicker, especially with having internet assets. So the world has gotten smaller, in my opinion, and it's easier to contact people. It's easier to get the word out. When I was coming up in the 70s, there were no cell phone, mobile phones or cell phones. I didn't know anything about that. And I am in a small town. But you all have enjoyed listening to Mr. Lou Rawls Jr. on Show Talk with Angela Butler. And I am Angela Butler, of course. And I thank you all for who will tune in to listen to this show, which will be aired again at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And it will be, this is a pre-recorded show. Those of you who would like to, please go out and purchase my books, Charles and Melinda, by Angela DeLois Butler. And please go out and purchase my other book that's with Print House, Inspirational Celebrity Short Stories. I got it out. All right, thank you all for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Be blessed.